This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking this Easter weekend in 2018 with the stories of three men whose experiences on the last Easter Sunday of World War II helped the rest of us to see some of the things we can so easily take for granted. In a few minutes, we're going to hear about where Glenn Schmidt did his praying on Easter Sunday, 1945, and how quickly the amazing answer to that prayer materialized. But to set it up, he was captured in a pillbox near Hattin, Germany, after obeying an order to hold at all costs and maintaining that position against all odds for more than 2 days. His helmet wouldn't fit on his head anymore because of a couple of holes a German machine gun bullet had left in it. And shortly before all that unfolded, a letter from back home in California had reached this 42nd Infantry Division soldier.
It's the only letter I can remember in all the time that I was over there that I had received from my father. And my father was not a writer of letters, I can tell you that. He wrote a portion of the 91st Psalm, the 7th verse, where it says, 1,000 shall fall at thy side, 10,000 at thy right hand, and it shall not come nigh thee. After I read that letter and we were told to go out on this patrol, I asked the fellows to take off their helmets and bow in a moment of a prayer, which we did. I'm so thankful I did at that time because, like I say, or have told, there are some that did not survive.
And obviously that's something that stuck with you and something that really proved true. As they died all around you, you found a way to survive. We talked about your capture, and I know the journey to the prisoner of war camp is a story in itself. I want to get to the conditions inside the camp, but just getting to it was pretty harrowing. Not only are you being marched and taken on trains and transported this way or that, at one point you had a very real fear that you could be killed by your own troops who were firing at your position.
The night we were captured, we were taken to a little town by the name of Buell, B-U-H-L, and lined up in the street. And our artillery was zeroing in on this little village. The church was on fire, and they're trying to set more buildings on fire with white phosphorus shells. And at that time, in two groups, we were separated maybe 20 feet, and an artillery shell came in, landed on that street between our two groups, ricocheted through the fence, and did not explode. Now, that's a miracle in itself.
And it wouldn't have bothered the Germans a whole lot if you guys had been killed.
No, sir.
Obviously, they were leaving you out there for that possibility.
It could have been.
So again, somebody's looking out for you. Then you get to the prisoner of war camp. And you had gone in, you described carrying around your BAR equipment, and you were strapping 145 pounds. Did you realize after you'd been captured that the starvation was going to set in? Did you realize that you would be so malnourished and fed so little?
Not at all. We had no idea. The Germans told us that the war was over for us and we could relax. But the day we walked into camp, there were approximately 100 of us, and I was up in front of the group because I had been in front of the group for some time without going into that part of the story. A German guard standing at the gate in good English says, "You will live from 5 to 7 months on what you get to eat here." Those weren't very encouraging words. The fellows behind us wanted to know what he said, and none of us would repeat it. But it proved to be quite true.
Well, and of course, at this point, nobody knows when the war is going to end. It's an uncertain future. You don't know what tomorrow is going to hold, but
that's true.
Is certainly unnerving. And then, as you said, it was proven true with the diet that you got. You hear about prisoner of war camps and aid parcels that show up. That didn't happen very often at Stalag 9B, did it?
No, sir. No. In the morning, they brought up, fellas went down to what we called a kitchen and brought up a barrel of ersatz coffee. It was just maybe a little chicory in it. We don't know. It had some color, and that's about it. Most of the fellas just washed in it. I drank it because I wanted something warm inside of me because there's still snow on the ground all over it. We were up on a mountaintop southeast of Frankfurt, about 30 miles.
And as far as food, not much of anything. Some bread with a lot of sawdust in it,
yes,
probably?
Yes. In the evening, A loaf of bread was handed to us to be divided between not less than six, mostly 10 to 12 fellas. I used my pocket knife. It was to be divided among six men or whatever. A group was chosen up, and I handed my pocket knife to him, and he cut it up as evenly as he could. The fellow who cut the bread got the last piece.
Mm-hmm.
So you know he cut it as close as he could.
And I have a surprise guest joining us on the line from Wichita, Kansas, is Dr. Bill Paschal, who, like Glenn, was a prisoner at Stalag 9B in Bad Orb, Germany during World War II. And these two did not know each other at the time, at least not by name. But Dr. Paschal, can you tell us quickly how you became aware of this gentleman named Glenn Schmidt and the powerful first impression that he made on you?
Yes, I sure can, Paul. Glenn is actually a lifesaver. We were in the prison camp, Bad Orb, Germany, and things were pretty grim. We'd witnessed some brutality to our man of confidence. We had been lined up in the yard with the guards facing us with machine guns. The food was almost non-existent. Recreation facilities were nothing. The building that we were in was a thin board roof and upper part of the walls. When it snowed outside, it snowed inside. And actually, a lot of the men in this building that I was in, there were 3,000 Americans, but there were 300 men in the barracks I was in. A lot of the men gave up hope, and they thought that it was a question of not when they would get liberated, but how long they could survive in this environment. Some of these men turned their face to the wall and didn't communicate with the rest of us. They kind of daydreamed the day away, and sure enough, they became the first to pass away or die. One night, there was a big, strong voice came out and said, "I shall recite to you the 23rd Psalm," and this voice began to do that. There was quite a few, non-believers in the crowd. There was quite a few boos and catcalls, but this strong voice recited the 23rd Psalm and some other things from the New Testament, sang some songs, and it was almost like a miracle that barracks became very, very quiet and attentive. You could hear a pin drop. This voice kept this up night after night. And so the lights were out. 300 men crowded there. I couldn't put a face to it. During the daytime, I spent three or four days. I wandered through the crowd of people that were in our barracks, talking to different people. And I would excuse myself and go on and talk to another person. Finally, I located the owner of that voice, and that was Glenn Smith of the 42nd Infantry Division.
And he's sitting here right now, and he just heard everything you said. And he's got a little water in his eyes after hearing it. Dr. Paschal, thank you. I know Glenn wouldn't have told us that story himself. Thank you for coming on and sharing it. Thank you for serving our country. And if you're up for it, I'd like to have you on for a full program one of these days.
Okay, that's fine. You bet.
Anything? God bless you, Bill.
You bet, Glenn.
So good to hear from you.
Yes.
I know you two share a very special bond. And,
yes, we do.
And I'll be back in touch with you, Dr. Paschal. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay, you bet.
All right, that's Bill Paschal from Wichita, Kansas, surprising Glenn Schmidt with that little story. And I know for you at home, that probably grabbed your attention the way it grabbed mine. Glenn, I think the question everyone asks is, why? What possessed you to take that kind of role and try to encourage all these other men? Why? What made that possible, and why did you do that?
Well, it was a period of desperation for us all. And I felt that if we didn't group together and try to hold the line ourselves, we would see the end like many others did. I'm just grateful to my Heavenly Father for giving me the inspiration to do that. Yeah, it's nothing in me. It's God alone.
And when the Germans took you captive, you left your helmet behind in that pillbox, but they let you take three things?
Yes, my pocket knife, my wedding ring, and my New Testament. And that New Testament went around our barracks from every day. We had Bible study, we had prayer time together, and I'm so thankful for it.
And obviously, from what we heard from Dr. Paschal, there are a lot of other POWs who are pretty thankful for it, too. Now, you're slowly starving to death. You have no idea when liberation is going to come. When it did come, how great of a day was that for you? And did you have enough energy to even enjoy it?
At that time, I was so weak I had to crawl across the floor, pull myself up either against the wall or against a pillar supporting the building in order to stand. And it was very difficult to walk at that time. The day before, which was Easter Sunday, 1st of April, 1945, some of us went outside. I asked the fellows if they'd like to go out for a little time of prayer, which we did. We heard machine gun fire coming up out of the valley below us, and we went back into the barracks that night, not knowing that all the guards were going to either leave or surrender the next day.
Was it almost too good to be true?
Yes, it was. It was a day of not only liberation, but a day of elation. The motto of the ex-prisoners of war is, freedom is not free. I see that even today. There are men giving their lives for their country. We always have. Throughout, when men are called upon, men and women today, are called upon to sacrifice for their country, they seem to do it willingly. That price that they pay is the ultimate price that anyone could pay with their life. Yeah. I am deeply gratified for my God and my country.
And we're grateful for the chance to hear some of Glenn Schmidt's story. If you want to hear how he came to again become the owner of that damaged helmet he had left behind in a pillbox when he was captured, then pull up episode number 366 at hometownheroesradio.com. And when we come back, April 1st, 1945, that Easter Sunday was also the day the Battle of Okinawa began. Meet a man who may have been the first American to capture a Japanese flag that day when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.